Western allies could have contributed decisively to an overthrow of the German Empire quite early in the war. Lloyd George wrote forcefully in maintenance of this view, "Half the shells and one-fifth the guns wasted in the great Western offensives could," he alleged, "have contributed decisively to Russia's performance." I am not so sure. In 1915, the Russian army certainly suffered from material shortages, but the Allies could hardly make them up because they had material shortages of their own. And in any case, to assume that guns and shell would have made any greater difference to the East than they did to the West was to mistake the importance of mere quantity. My study of the engagements of 1915 showed that shell shortage was very often used as an excuse for blundering and disorganization that were much more important in causing Russia's defeats of that year than mere shortage of material. In any case, by 1916, the Russians' own output of war goods had reached generally satisfactory dimensions. On the 1st of January 1917, Russian superiority on the Eastern Front was in some ways comparable to the Western powers' superiority 18 months later in France. It would have taken much more than dispatch of guns and shell to the Eastern Front to cause the defeat of Germany there. This was a discovery that came as a surprise to me, since I had always assumed, following Golovin and others, that the Russian army had lost battles because of crippling material shortages. And I had gone on, as other writers have done, to assume that this was an inevitable consequence of the economic backwardness of the Tsarist state. But when I consulted the figures for Russia's output of war goods, I soon found that the shortages had been exaggerated, and sometimes invented after the event. It is not really accurate to say, for instance, that the Russian army was not ready for war and that it plunged in before it was ready in order to save the French. At the time, commanders asserted that they were ready even 4 days before the army crossed the German border. But what they understood as readiness was, of course, woefully at odds with wartime reality. They had had no idea what to expect. But unreadiness was discovered subsequent to the battles and was at bottom a hard luck story. In 1914 to 1915, lack of war goods was not a comment on Russia's economic backwardness, but rather on the slowness with which her regime reacted to the needs of war. The politicians and the generals used shell shortage as a political football against the government and the war ministry, and their tales of shell shortage were therefore treated with scepticism. The artillerymen wrote off infantrymen as stupid and alarmist, and when the government did decide to do anything, it turned to foreign producers who failed to deliver on time. But once the government made up its quarrel with industrialists, the country proved able to produce war goods in fair quantity. By 1916, it could produce aircraft, guns, gas masks, hand grenades, wireless sets, and the rest, if not in immense quantities, as in the Second World War, at least in quantities sufficient to win the war in the East if other things had been equal. By September 1916, for instance, Russia could produce 4,500,000 shells per month. This compares with German output of 7 million, Austro-Hungarian of 1 million. And since the bulk of this quantity went elsewhere, to the Western or Italian fronts, there was not much truth in the assertion that Russia lost the war because of crippling material weaknesses. It was the country's inability to make use of its economic weight that began to interest me, rather than the backwardness of which many writers had spoken. I began to examine the army's structure, and again discovered some surprises. The army, as it grew before 1914, split roughly between a patrician wing, of which Grand Duke Nicholas, Inspector General of Cavalry and Commander-in-Chief in wartime, was the head, and a praetorian one, dominated by the War Minister, Sukhomlinov. I had always read accounts that made out Sukhomlinov to be bungling, corrupt. He was detested by liberal Russia on both counts, and was imprisoned after the March Revolution. But much to my surprise, the evidence as I saw it showed that Sukhomlinov, and not his enemies, was the real reformer. His enemies, though eventually